Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the Shots and Tenier NFL Podcast 2026 first round draft review. That's right, it is Friday, April 24th, 2026. I am Aaron Schatz. You know me as the DVOA guy from FTN Fantasy. He is Mike Tenier. You know him from his Substack, the 2Deep Zone at miketenier.substack.com. And we are joined for our draft coverage by Benjamin Robinson of Grinding the Mocks, who knows where these guys were supposed to go compared to where they actually went. Before we get into talking about the draft, I do have a message for everybody from FTN. If you are a dynasty fantasy football player or just looking to get a head start on the 2026 fantasy season and you want to learn more about the rookie class, you want to check out Jeff Radcliffe's Rookie Fantasy Scouting Guide after the NFL draft. Next week, once all the players have landed on NFL rosters, Jeff will release a full post-draft update, analyzing landing spots, depth charts, and scheme fits, so you will know exactly which rookies are rising and which are falling. The Rookie Fantasy Scouting Guide is included with your FTN NFL Pro subscription, as is all the DVOA data, all the charting data, the DVOA for charting splits, man and zone, and different run concepts. All that stuff is in your NFL Pro subscription. Get 10% off with code SHOTS at checkout on ftnfantasy.com. That is code SHOTS, my name spelled S-C-H-A-T-Z. And make sure you get the Rookie Fantasy Scouting Guide. So, Ben, 27 of your top 32 players went in the first round, but there were definitely some surprises. We're not going to start with the biggest surprise. We're going to start with the earliest surprise, which is Jeremiah Love to the Arizona Cardinals at number 3. I don't know if you realize this, but he's not just a running back.
Never heard that before. Never before.
You're triggering so many people.
This has been a flashpoint for the analytics community versus the scouting community. I know how good Love is supposed to be. And I think we've learned over the last couple of years that running backs can have more value than we thought they could if you put them in the right situation. This is not the right situation.
No. I think you're right about, one of the things that's really key about the run game is one of the most valuable plays in football. I remember Eric Eager wrote about this when he was doing public research at Pro Football Focus. The perfectly blocked run is one of the most efficient plays in football. When you pull up the depth chart for the Cardinals offensive line, it's Paris Johnson, Isaac Seumalo, Keontae Froholt. Yeah, their left side is okay.
Healthy.
Their right side, a lot of holes.
Elijah Wilkinson is 31 years old, yes.
Yep. And so, we know that the offensive line is a weak link for the run game. One player misses a block, and then boom, suddenly, the play is usually, it's not good, even no matter how elusive you are. I think that the Cardinals did, the Titans, for example, and the Giants, a huge favor by doing this. I think if the Cardinals had gone somewhere else, like Arvell Reese or something like that, then I think almost certainly he would have gone at 4 or 5, and then suddenly you're looking at a very different complexion of a draft for those teams.
Well, at least with the Titans, you can say, well, the Titans have a quarterback, so there's that logic. With the Giants, you can make the same thing. Commanders, you can make the same thing. The Cardinals have Jacoby Brissett and Gardner Minshew at quarterback. They're going to have to solve their quarterback problem in the future after making Jeremiah Love run several hundred carries behind that line.
I saw someone put a stat up saying the reason that Arizona needed to do this is because they were next to last in yards per carry last year, ahead of only the Las Vegas Raiders. Remind me again what the Las Vegas Raiders did in the first round of the draft last year. That's strong, solved their yards per carry problem.
It's some strong post hoc ergo propter hoc stuff. Like, yeah, so like it's just really like a strong logical fallacy there. But you saw that, and then you also saw the Seahawks with their 32nd pick. The trade off must have not been existent at all,
right?
And they ended up drafting Jadarian Price.
I'm really surprised in a draft where everyone felt there was one running back. How did we end up with two going in the first round?
It was kind of interesting for the Seahawks there. You know, I had it, you know, I have this metric on my website, weighted mock draft shares, and at the end of the first round, the top two players on the board for the Seahawks were Tennessee cornerback Colton Hood and Jadarian Price. He was kind of like a dark horse of, you know, if they do stay there, they're going to want to pick a running back. And so I think they're kind of like, they want the home run hitter. They are fine with him being a rotational back and not a three down back. You know, neither of the running backs at Notre Dame caught the ball very much at all. Like, that's the thing about, you know, Jeremiah Love as the offensive weapon. You didn't even see that very much in college.
Right.
And with Price, you didn't see that almost at all. He was a return guy. And so we know that, but they already have, the wide receiver guy. Yeah, Shaheed there, who will be there, who's been proven as a returner at the pro level. So to me, yeah, sure. It's very much like a pretty low ceiling, low floor kind of pick. I thought they would have gone for one of the corners there.
Yeah, they wanted to trade down. They talked about wanting to trade down. The Bills and the 49ers out-jockeyed them, I think. They got the deals I think the Seahawks would have wanted to get. John Schneider's always loved his, like, toolsy running backs. They go back all through the 2010s. He's usually in the second round where they're these Christian Michaels and guys like that would come in. And they don't usually work out for them, except that there's always this committee of guys who aren't terrible.
Reminder that you can make comments if you are watching us live. CO81385 says perhaps the Cardinals wanted to simply take the best player available because they had so many needs that they weren't sure where to start.
That would be Arvell Reese, or that would have been Mansoor Delane, or I mean, you say it, Benjamin.
I mean, on the consensus big boards, wide left, the Arif Hassan's publication wrote a piece the other week using some of my data to show that, you know, Grinding the Mocks is really quite good at the best in the industry at, you know, pegging draft value, just draft pick value. But if you're looking at trying to predict like the future, just like actual NFL draft performance, his consensus big board does a little bit better than my data. If you just look at the pure big board rankings, you know, Mendoza was number one and Love was number two. So I think that's very too generous. I don't think it's baking enough of that positional value in. I think he's definitely it's not like they drafted like him and he was the 10th overall player in the class. It wasn't like that kind of a reach. Mm-hmm. I had him as my fourth ranked player in my data. But yeah, you're right. Like, it just, they have so many other needs. I would just pick almost any other player, just throw a dartboard at a different position ranked high on the consensus board and just do that. I would have almost rather taken one of the offensive linemen there, even though they went a lot later.
Yeah. One more comment from AirNate99. With Jacoby Brissett, Love is going to be seeing boxes he's never seen at Notre Dame.
I think that's accurate. Brissett played well, especially in second half last year. No one's looking at the rest of that offense, despite the fact there is some talent, saying, oh man, we got to back up. We got to worry about this incredible passing game that they have in Arizona.
CJ Carr, the quarterback at Notre Dame, is like, he'll be in discussion to be drafted next year. I don't think people love him, but like he's not like Arch Manning level, but like, yeah. That logic is just backwards.
All right, let's talk about the biggest reaches, the guys who rose the most from their estimated draft position at Grinding the Mocks. Number one, everybody I think will know. It is Ty Simpson to the Rams at 13. Estimated draft position was 35. And there is a lot of discussion about who made this pick. Because Sean McVay, if we want to play read the body language, did not look happy at the press conference afterwards. And this does not seem like the kind of quarterback that Sean McVay really wants to run his offense. That's why they traded Jared Goff in the first place.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, so this is the biggest draft day reach at quarterback since 2024 when the Falcons drafted Michael Penix at 8 overall when he had a 23rd ranked expected draft position in my data. Kind of also in that general range, you saw like Trey Lance when the Niners picked him at pick 3 in 2021. And then also you saw it a little bit with Bo Nix in the same draft where he was kind of a second round kind of guy and he went in that like 12 range. But or like he was a late first round guy in my data. So Simpson had a 28.8 expected draft position. And there's always like a little bit of a log jam sometimes at the end of round one, when there's like five or six or so guys who have like first round possibilities. And yeah, this year, a couple other guys who we'll talk about went in that range instead. But yeah, I was very surprised. You know, you don't want to like negatively react sometimes in this way, because if there's one player that one type of position, I guess, that can make this worthwhile, it's quarterback. But I just, the evaluation on Simpson is so checkered given the lack of actual snaps and lack of actual play in college. And then also the quality that he showed in those snaps when he was playing against tough competition. Like, it's just really hard to see, especially in like a win now mode. I thought if they were going to be thinking long-term, they might think, hey, like Monroe Freeling was there, you know, Caden Proctor, like these players who can have an impact on the long-term of your franchise. But you know, I don't know. I don't view this the same way as, you know, the Packers drafting Jordan Love when you still have Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers was in some amount of decline and Love was a first round prospect by many.
Right. My analysis of this pick is it, and if this is a sign of the fall of Camelot between Snead and McVay, what a salvo, what a shot fired, if that's what this comes down to, that the two of them are sniping at each other somehow behind the scenes and one overruled the other. Shocking.
I don't think there's a lot of sniping behind the scenes.
Okay.
This was a heavily guarded secret. I think only of like the major insiders. Mm-hmm. Todd McShay was the only one who had any guts to say, this is what I think will happen. And then it started coming out a little bit in like dribbles that like Jay Glazer was like, I think Ty Simpson's in the first round. I think the Rams like him a lot. And so, but I don't think anyone thought that he would.
No, I thought people thought the Rams would either trade down or trade up.
Yeah. So in my weighted mock draft shares for Ty Simpson, when we just look at his mock drafts and say, hey, let's look at those and rank them based on who made the mock draft and, you know, when it was made, he was heavily favored to go to the Cardinals. Yeah. So to me, it was like, well, the Cardinals are going to trade into this spot and they're going to use that later in the draft. And, you know, the amount of big trades didn't really happen very early on. And the trades that happened later were very short move ups. And, you know, yeah, that's kind of eventually how it materialized. So other teams got into the end of the first round. And at that point, the Cardinals had no incentive to do it because Simpson was gone. So it was definitely a strategic decision by the Rams. I always thought that they were less likely to take a receiver here and more likely to take like a lineman.
Right.
But this was kind of like that dark horse selection that very few people had in their mocks.
Bill Houston wants to know, why didn't the Rams wait until next year when more quality quarterbacks should be available? And I think the answer to that is it's rare that the Rams or a team as good as the Rams is picking at 13.
Right.
And they will probably not be picking at 13 next year. And they, even if there are five quarterbacks in the first round next year, the Rams wouldn't get a shot at any of them.
Mm-hmm.
I still don't think.
Right.
Good.
And you have to take in the fact that they did pick up Trent McDuffie. So
that's, yeah.
Yeah. And so I think if they were considering, when there were mock drafts that were linking Simpson to the Rams, it was pre that trade. I don't think people thought that they would be considering taking him at pick 13, that they'd be more likely to do something different there because they had gone really hard. So they kind of are like doing the win now, but then also win later. So they're kind of like trying to have their cake and eat it too, to like a certain extent, which is
it feels like what they're doing is
thread.
it feels like what they're doing is win now and go 8-9 later.
Right, right. They overthought this. And some of those mocks had to be when there were Matthew Stafford retirement rumors, certainly before they re-upped with him a couple weeks ago. So it's like, oh, they're going to take Ty Simpson. Now it looks like, I mean, Stafford is looks like he's in position to play 2 more years. So this is for 3 years down the road. We're really like playing a junk bond kind of game here.
The next biggest reach slash riser was Caleb Banks and his foot to the Vikings at 18 after his expected draft position was 42.
Yeah, he was one of my big risers after the Senior Bowl, just really tore it up. Came to the combine and then injured himself there. And that wouldn't necessarily be a huge deal. Obviously, it would have, you know, no one wants to get hurt in the draft process, but there's a history of injury there. This feels like a pick that is a need pick for the Vikings. And so I just think it's kind of ironic. They fired Kwesi Adofo-Mensah so they could do this. Like, obviously there's a lot more, but like, to me, this was a big surprise given the players that were still on the board. You know, Monroe Freeling was still on the board. He went, you know, the next pick after Dylan Thieneman, who was the player like vastly mocked to them, like more than half of my weighted mocks for the Vikings went there. But, you know, he has the prototypical size. He was my third defensive tackle. I thought he would go on day two. And I think the whole message here is that they just are betting that if he can figure it out, that it'll be a big value for them. And so he is like probably the better of the like pass rushing defensive tackles. Like you can see it if you looked at specific games of his, like apparently his LSU game was awesome, yes. But then you'd see him in other games and you're just kind of like, where is he? So he just wasn't consistent and he was hurt. And so right. it's a bet that he can become more consistent and get hurt less. And I just think that's like two bets that are just really tough to win. And so this feels like I can't believe that this is kind of like the move that they ended up making.
The risk reward factor, because the where is he was often not on the field, okay, for so much of 2025. And there were hernia issues before that. The risk reward at where they picked is shocking for what they're getting out of this, because there is a risk that they have an injury case forever here at defensive tackle that's really high for doing this in the middle of the first round without making any effort to move up or down, mitigate that risk in any way.
Yeah. I thought tackle made a lot more sense for them. I think safety was mocked at them a ton just because Harrison Smith is retiring, right? I think that's pretty much
The case.
And so, you know, replacing him with another safety, like, I guess it makes sense. The safeties in this class, every single one of them fell relative to their ADP by a decent amount. And right. To me, like, I think it wouldn't surprise me if they drafted a safety in the second or third round. But yeah, to me, I think tackle is like actually a pretty pressing future need.
Yeah.
And I was surprised that Freeling ended up going at 19. I mean, I wasn't surprised that he went there. They have a really shrewd group there, that, you know, GM and the ownerships. But yeah, like that this pick is, I think, is just sour. I'm souring on it already.
Number three riser, Mansoor Delane, the cornerback from LSU, to the Chiefs at 6 when his expected draft position was 12. What do you think of the Chiefs trading a third and a fifth to move up from 9 to 6 to get this guy?
Yeah, I mean, they had to trade up to get this pick, right? Yeah. So I guess they were concerned that they would be left holding the bag. And that
Washington
none of the corners,
and the Saints were the teams that they passed.
Yeah.
Yep. And honestly, I think this is a great move for Cleveland. I think their time is not now. They need more. I think they need to get younger. And so to me, if you were going to take the offensive tackle at 6 and instead you take him at 9 and you get more picks, then that's a win-win from the Browns' perspective. But I think this also speaks to the relative lack of high-end corners in this class. And so the Jermod McCoy news, and he'll be like my top player left on my top 32. He was a massive faller coming into draft week and then fell even more. Right. The next cornerback went at 29, you know, Chris Johnson from San Diego State to the Miami Dolphins. And so I think they just felt like they didn't want to risk it. But, yeah, the Chiefs trading up here, I would have just waited and seen, you know, Ruben Bain would have been on the board. Or maybe Delane would have just been there. Their intelligence must have been telling them that, you know, the Saints or the Commanders really wanted him. But I still believe that if the Browns had stuck there and taken Fano, I think the Commanders probably would have still taken Styles. You had to think that the Saints are just like such a lock to take, you know, to take Jordan Tyson, or just to take Delane, that they weren't going to take Jordan Tyson. But then I think they could have ended up with Tyson. I think that would have been a fine pick for them there. So I think, I think they think that they need more help on defense. And I think the offense stagnated last year in a major way.
The Chiefs lost their entire secondary. That is a pressing need. Word out of the reporting this morning was that Spagnuolo wanted Delane so much that he talked to Veach, and they canceled their visit with Delane to throw opponents off the scent that they were that interested in him, which is brought maybe a little too much spycraft type of thing here, but it speaks to within the building what they thought about him. I had Delane, I think, number one or number two on my list too, in terms of a prospect. So price was high to move up for get him, but it was one of the certified first rounders, and it was at their biggest position of need, in my opinion.
Yeah, Delane was the third most mocked player to the Chiefs in my data.
Okay,
but I think I would have rather have stayed there, had the picks. I would have just taken Chris Johnson at 29. He was there at 29. And so to me, like, taking a wide receiver and Chris Johnson, if you really wanted, there obviously is a huge gap. So I get it. But yeah, it wasn't like a huge secret that like the Chiefs didn't like Delane. Like, he was my third most mocked player to them. So to me, yeah, I get it. I think it speaks more to the fact that, you know, hey, like, just they wanted the best one. But in the past, they really haven't done that. In the past, they've been able to find lots of guys later in the draft and turn them into gems. And so, yeah.
They might need to do that, too. They might need to have to do that because they've lost guys.
Yeah, they've lost a lot of guys.
Yeah.
Fourth biggest riser, Kalen Rutledge and his awesome mullet.
Yes.
To the Texans at 26.
For folks that were listening last week,
44, go ahead, sorry. And you had him as a fifth rounder at the start of the season. He really climbed during the 2025 season, this guy, but he's something the Texans absolutely needed.
Needed to trade up for, too, apparently.
Oh,
that's like one of the worst processes in my mind, to trade up for a guard. He was, you know, with folks who listened last week, I had him as the biggest riser coming into draft week. He definitely got on people's radar at the Senior Bowl, had a nice Senior Bowl. I think he's a nice prospect, but I still think that trading up, even though it wasn't a huge trade up to get him, I'm not a fan of that. But yeah, I think he's a fine player. You know, Mike talked about him being Mr. Power Pull guy.
Yeah.
And so to me, you know, I forget who the Texans offensive coordinator is now, but because
they just gave up. It's like Tommy Slowick. They found a new Slowick.
Wait, hold on. Yeah. So to me, like, you know, hey, does this signal they're going to be more of a gap team and less of a zone team? Like, yeah, last year they you know, made a big trade up to draft Woody Marks from USC. And so it'd be interesting to see what they do with the rest of their picks. But yeah,
They have Montgomery.
Nick Kelly is still their offensive coordinator for some reason. Maybe it's because I watched the playoffs. I assumed he had gotten fired. He had not gotten fired. I mean, I like Rutledge, but that's another one. Yeah, moving up. I think they had to like go like 30 slots down in the third round or something like that when you add up what they had to do to go up and get Rutledge at guard. I don't see the Texans as this very complete team that can play that kind of game.
By the way, I'll point out the biggest reach according to consensus big boards, but not mock drafts, was Malachi Lawrence, the edge to the Cowboys at 23. He was on consensus big boards, had him more as a second rounder, but a lot of people did mock him to the Cowboys, and everybody knew the Cowboys liked him, so that's not really a surprise.
Yeah, he was he was ranked 27th in my data, and you know, they ended up trading down with the Eagles. You know, that was kind of a surprise there. We'll talk about that in the fallers section. But yeah, he was not a surprise first rounder in my data. He was a Shrine Bowl guy, the pride of the Eric Gaukko Shrine Bowl regime. they've had some first round picks, you know, technically, Zay Flowers came to the Shrine Bowl. I think he mostly just hung out and did whatever he wanted to do. But Malachi Lawrence, like, self-made Shrine Bowl, like, he came and did everything. Like, it's such a good story, like, to go there, to be unheralded. I don't think he ended up going to the Senior Bowl at all, to really killing it. And that led people to investigate him and look at his tape more and come away with the idea that he should at least be a day two pick is awesome. And I wasn't surprised that he went in round one. The Cowboys were the second most team that he was mocked to, along with Buffalo. So that was not shocking to me necessarily. But yeah,
the high end upside highlights on him are so good, where he looks like the special player, and he was on such a bad team, where you can imagine where he was just going out there getting blocked, or from the third quarter on, the opponent was handing off, and you didn't get to see what he did special. I like him overall.
All right, let's talk about the biggest fallers. Now, remember that this is sort of logarithmic. So falling at the top is a bigger deal than falling at the bottom. So when I say to you the biggest faller was Arvel Reese, he only went from an expected position of 3 to an actual position of 5. But we were all sitting there going, what about Arvel Reese? And it's very interesting that he went to the Giants, who I think just said, let's just get the best players, and then we'll figure out where we're putting them on our defense. Because he's going to be an off-ball linebacker initially. I can't imagine that he's going to be an edge rusher initially. And then they have to look at the question of whether they want to trade somebody, or do they just want to wait for the contracts to end so that Arvel Reese can become a starting edge?
I feel like Brian Burns has to demonstrate that he's with the program. Otherwise, we'll be hearing about him maybe at the trade deadline, maybe not in June or whatever. Thibodeau is gone, Thibodeau's been gone for 3 years. They can't get rid of him. Now he's gone. But you're right. I think you're going to see a lot of Reese at off ball, and then NASCAR packages. They get him, Campbell, and Burns on the field, assuming Burns isn't on the Dexter Lawrence get me out of here train.
Yeah.
Yeah, they've just been spending a lot of draft capital on the offensive line. You know, you mentioned Thibodeau, Abdul Carter from last year's class. I think to me, the best possible scenario is kind of like the Micah Parsons one, which is you start him off at linebacker, there's some injury somewhere, and he just shows that he's too good to ignore, and they convert him into a pass rusher, and he begins to develop. If he stays at off-ball linebacker his entire time with the Giants here, it's very surprising. But yeah, in terms of my weighted mock draft shares for Reese, the Giants were not in the top 5 for him. Jets obviously were big, Cardinals were big, Titans were big. If he was on the board, the Saints, the Cowboys in a trade up, you know, I think this was a very big surprise. I was with bated breath waiting to hear Goodell turn in the Jets pick at 2, because I just had been so on the David Bailey should be the number 2 overall pick train for a long time. And so it was very gratifying for that to actually happen. But then afterwards I was like, oh, Reese should go next. Right. And then Love went, and I'm like, oh, the Titans suddenly could draft Arvel Reese. And then he kept going, and then at pick 5, you know, some people view him as a really, really, I think the worst case scenario, right, is, well, I guess not the worst case. The best of the worst case scenarios is he shows that he's a really good off-ball linebacker and just stays there. But I think, obviously, the worst scenario is he just stays there and he's not very good. But, yeah.
That seems unlikely. Right. The second faller, wide receiver Omar Cooper Jr. to the Jets at 30, when his expected draft position was 19. And I see this as a point to just talk about the Jets in general, who did 3 first-round picks: David Bailey, Kenyon Sadiq, the tight end out of Oregon, and Omar Cooper Jr. Mike, what do you think about the Jets, my man?
I like it, and I don't usually like anything the Jets do. Even when they have 2 or 3 first-round picks, I think they bungle it. I think Benjamin's going to want to talk about Bailey a little bit more. I'll go to the offensive side of the ball. I'm not like Mr. Omar Cooper. I think that's a good pickup where he is at the end of the first round. When you put him and Sadiq, and then you factor in things like that, you know, you have Jarrett Wilson, et cetera, I can see what their offense is supposed to look like. And as of last week, I didn't know what the Jets offense was supposed to look like. I don't know where the ball was supposed to go. I don't know how they were going to try to generate plays with Geno Smith. Now you've got this mismatched tight end who can do yak. Now you've got this short target, you know, dink and dunk and create with yak wide receiver. Now the Jets offense makes some sense to me. I can see them being a more competitive team.
Yes, Thordane Hammer says, finally, we get an answer to the age-old question.
Oh, yeah.
What if Geno Smith had weapons?
Yeah, because DK Metcalf and freaking Tyler Lockett. Come on.
You know who these guys are great weapons for is Lenora Sellers. Or somebody, whoever the Jets. I mean, the Jets added too much defense to probably end up with the number one pick next year. But whoever becomes the second or third quarterback off the board next year, this is who that guy gets to throw to.
They still have the Colts first round pick next year.
Yeah,
well.
So they can move forget up. That. That's true.
So yeah, that's the optionality discussion here. I thought I compared the Kenyon Sadiq selection to the Raiders drafting Brock Bowers, you know, a couple years ago. And the reason I compared it is that the year before drafting Brock Bowers and the year now before selecting Kenyon Sadiq, both teams took decently well-regarded second round tight ends.
Yeah.
And so that was the surprising thing to me. The Sadiq, you know, he was very heavily favored to be involved at 14 to the Ravens and 15 to the Bucks, 16 to the Jets. When you remove David Bailey and Arvell Reese, Omar Cooper Jr. was my top mocked player to the Jets.
Hmm.
I thought that Mekhi Lemon was the likely pick there. Okay. And so he was the next most mocked player after Omar Cooper Jr. Coming into the like draft process, he was not as highly regarded, and he rose a bit during the draft process. And then I thought that he was a strong likelihood to the Jets or to the Steelers. And we know the Steelers really wanted to draft Mekhi Lemon so much that they were like talking to him on the phone. And then the Eagles picked them and then were like, hey, sorry, like these guys are actually drafting me. Not you're telling me that you're going to draft me if I'm there on the next pick. But yeah, no, I was surprised at the Sadiq pick just because of that investment. I guess it's not like you don't want to throw like you don't want to like sunk cost bias yourself, right? Like,
right.
If you don't think that Taylor is good, then you know. To me, this is like more.
No, I think this is a go-to tight end thing. I don't think this is a we don't think Taylor is good thing.
I mean, Michael Mayer, you know, usually like he won the Mackey Award.
Right.
He was like a borderline first round pick, and what has he done since? I think very few offenses actually feature two tight ends really well. And so, and then they have Garrett Wilson. They brought in Adonai Mitchell. They're bringing in Omar Cooper. I just think there's not enough mouths to feed and they want to run the ball with Breece Hall. Like, I mean, they're building a nice little team here. I don't think it's that, but yeah.
I don't hear Adonai Mitchell and think there's not enough mouths to feed.
That's not a mouth. That is not a mouth.
I think they can go two tight ends. I mean, we'll see how much they go two tight ends, but I think they can go two tight ends.
I do think it does raise their floor. But yeah, I think they are going to be in the QB market again next year. But
oh my god, they're absolutely in the QB
They might need to package both of their picks to do it for sure.
Yeah. The third biggest faller, and I don't think we have to talk too much about this guy, is Caleb Downs, the safety, who dropped from an 8 expected position to an 11. And the Cowboys are very happy. I think the Cowboys are very happy getting him.
And the Cowboys were moving around cleverly in the first round. They traded up there.
They traded up there, but they didn't trade very much. They basically just had to say to Miami, if you agree not to take this guy, we'll give you these two low picks.
Right, there were low picks. And then they got extra picks from the Eagles in the trade down later. So they managed the first round very well and got a hell of a player.
Yeah. He's great. Obviously, we talk about positional value and all that, but this is a really great player. And, you know, the thing about positional value is with linebackers and safeties, I think it's more we're not sure the position is as valuable. Whereas with running back, it's we're not sure this position is as valuable and you need a lot of help from your teammates. I think Caleb Downs can be great despite no matter what the rest of the defense does. He's going to play very well. I feel the same way about like Sonny Styles. It's not quite the same as the running back thing. Go ahead.
I will say, you know, I mentioned earlier that safeties have just consistently the first round mocked safeties have all fallen pretty much relative to their expected draft.
Right. We'll get to it when we talk about the top guys left, but Emmanuel McNeil Warren fell out of the first round entirely.
And then Thienemann, who was mocked, like I said, ad nauseum to the Vikings at pick 18, fell quite a bit, and he went 25th overall. And so, yeah, like I if they must have, they really liked Downs, obviously. There's some amount of belief that he's not an elite athlete. Obviously he's an elite football talent. You know, I think there'll be a lot of comparison. Like, you'll follow both of their careers. I know at the time, like in that draft with Kyle Hamilton was drafted, there was also like, that was the bet that Kwesi Udofo-Mensah made on Lewis Cine, when they traded down.
Oh gosh.
And it didn't work out. So, but yeah, we'll see. But I think Dylan Thienemann, I almost prefer him in some ways. His production was very good. Obviously, not all safeties are created equal. His production was very good at Oregon, and he's an elite athlete. For Downs, we just know that he's a very good producer, but I'd rather have – I don't know how good of an athlete he is, and he'll have to rely on that a lot more as a pro than he was in college. It's going to be really interesting, the tale of the tape or the tale of the athleticism.
The fourth faller was Mekhi Lemon. Expected draft position 13, went to the Eagles at 20 in the trade-up where they sniped the Steelers. A.J. Brown, you are a Patriot.
No question about it. And one thing I find interesting for the Eagles is we think of Mekhi Lemon as a slot guy. Just about everybody they brought in are guys I think of as slot guys. And Devontae Smith was usually more comfortable, productive playing in the slot than A.J. Brown. Don't know what the Eagles are building here. Kind of thought they were going to go offensive line, frankly.
Yes.
But Lemon might have been too good to pass up as he started to fall down the board.
Yeah, with Lane Johnson being close to retirement and all the guys that this year that were like, these guys are really right tackles.
Right.
Like, I thought they would go offensive
line.
Yeah, in my weighted mock draft shares for the Eagles, offensive line, 70% of first-round mocks.
Mm-hmm.
But when they got on the board – Miller was off, like Miller from Clemson was drafted. Monroe Freeling, gone. Caden Proctor, gone. And so the top mock player there was Max Iheanacho, the Arizona State offensive lineman, who ended up going a pick later, the consolation prize that the Steelers had to be, you know, to get when they could not quite. Well, you know, I don't blame them for not trading up. I think, you know, to me, like, drafting something that will help the quarterback of the Steelers' future is fine. I think Iheanacho has like a great deal of upside, but yeah, this was pretty surprising. I think when they were trading up, the Adler like, yeah, like who are the like remaining offensive linemen? And so I think people might've thought, is this Iheanacho? Cause there had been a run on offensive linemen. And Proctor went a bit earlier than people thought. So, but yeah, I think that was a big surprise. And yeah, like they have a logjam. Something's going to have to give. And I think the idea must be that they project Lemon to play more outside.
On the outside.
Along with AJ Brown Wicks. Already looking for houses in Dover. That's the rich suburb, baby. AJ Brown already looking. I'm telling you, that's everybody knows it's happening. It is the worst kept secret in the entire
world. Not Worcester?
No, we're too far. This is an hour from Foxborough, buddy. Nobody's coming here. No, all the nice houses are in Dover. Oh, my God. I went to Charles Laquadera's house once to interview him for a piece I was writing. He was the old DJ of WBCN, the morning guy. That house was unbelievable.
In the meantime, he can stay in Stefan Diggs's houseboat.
That's probably true. let's talk about the five holdovers. So these are the top players available. These are the players you had in your top 32 who did not go in the first round. Jermaud McCoy, the cornerback from Tennessee, who you had ranked 22nd. Clearly, this is the knee.
Yes, his knee.
Yeah, but, this is the knee. But, he's a great player. This is the knee.
The Cardinals will take him and make one good cornerback out of him and Will Johnson. They'll Frankenstein the parts together that work.
Yeah, he does sound interesting, I think, to the Cardinals, who pick 34.
He's going to set the all-time injury record, Aaron.
You're going to break it. He could go to the 49ers who pick 33, and then they will set the all-time injury record. Although there's another guy on this list I think makes even more sense for the 49ers.
I won't make any reference to the electrical substation. Zero reference.
Number two is Denzel Boston, the wide receiver for Washington, ranked 25th. He's going to the Bills at 35, right? Like, the Bills have played this great to move down twice and still get the player that everybody mocked them originally. Like, he's going to the Bills at 35, right?
Feels right.
Yeah. He's their kind of receiver, for better or for worse.
Caden McDonald, defensive tackle, Ohio State. If I remember correctly, this is the guy who's primarily a run stopper, not a pass rusher, and he was ranked 28th.
Yeah, so I think for him, he's actually was the most mocked player to the Bills. So it wouldn't necessarily surprise me.
They take him instead of Boston? That's true.
Yeah, the top five players mocked to the Bills in first-round mocks were Caden McDonald, Malachi Lawrence, C.J. Allen, Casey Concepcion, and Cassius Howell. And of those guys, only Concepcion and Lawrence are off the board. So Washington definitely in consideration. But yeah, no, I think Boston might go there, but they have a lot more picks now to play with. I think they played last night really well given their situation.
Yes, agreed.
Number four, Emmanuel McNeil Warren, safety from Toledo. And he's the guy I think makes sense for the 49ers to take with the first pick tonight.
Is it a character thing with him, Benjamin? Is there a character worry?
I think it's just a logjam on the safety. Okay. Specifically, I think like you just push them down if he was borderline anyway. I think the scenario where he went in round one maybe was a little more tied to Thieneman going at 18 or 19. Okay. And then once he slipped down, then I think most teams are just kind of like, well, yeah, like we could take him in the first round or not. And so I think there wasn't as much of a push up for him there. So, but yeah, I think the fact that those safeties tend to fall was kind of the bigger explainer. I don't know if there's anything about character. Even Daniel Jeremiah had mentioned that, like, I think he's more of an early day two guy, and that kind of fits into maybe his archetype more.
And then the fifth is Chase Besantis, guard from Texas A&M, who rank 32, could go to any number of teams that are picking at the top of the draft tonight, really.
Yeah, I had one guard. You had one. I had one guard in my first round, and it was him, and it ended up being Rutledge. So, you know, I'll take it.
Well, no, you must have had.
Along with Ioane, the borderline of the borderline guys.
Ioane, everybody knew Ioane was going.
Ioane was kind of interesting. I did not expect the Ravens to do the consensus thing. It's a very safe pick, but the positional value, you know, they just had this whole ordeal with Tyler Linderbaum where he was so good, they ended up not being able to pay him. So,
One more question from Thordain Hammer. With Ty Simpson off the board, which quarterback goes way too high tonight? And I pointed out before we got on to Mike that ESPN's Matt Miller second round mock had both Carson Beck and Garrett Nussmeier suggested to go in the second round. I don't think it's going to happen, but between those two guys and Drew Allar, who do you think goes first?
I would take Nussmeier. What would you do, Benjamin? Or what do your numbers tell you?
So when I made my top 100 that I posted on my Substack, I did an additional kind of level of analysis called decision trees to try to predict across my entire like different metrics that I have who what makes them most likely to go in the first round. It turns out that like an average of all the metrics is the best. And so in that analysis, I had no other quarterbacks that went on day two. So to me, I think a lot of my data is like overrating some of these guys. Mm-hmm. I expect Nussmeier to go day three. And I had heard Tom Pelissero say on an immediate availability that teams like Carson Beck a lot. I don't see, it's like some of these teams didn't watch this year. They only watched like 2 years ago when he was good. I don't see that either, but if I had to pick one, you know, I think Beck seems like kind of interesting. But, you know, also there's like Cole Payton was a guy talked about a lot. Talen Green from Arkansas got some love. But I think all those guys go day three. I don't think Drew Aller is going on day two. Like, man, just like it's just the quarterback class really stinks. So that's it.
If you want toolsy guy to mess around with, you take Payton or Green. They can really run. You can talk about package stuff. Or you could say, well, he can be the mobile guy off the bench. If I'm just getting one of these guys, I'll take Luke Altmyer. Or Sawyer Robertson at that in the sixth, seventh round, rather than saying, well, I got to go out there and get Carson Beck, like you said, based on what he did in like 2023.
The odds of one of these guys being good are very bad. All right, that does it for the show. Again, thanks to Ben Robinson. So Grinding the Mocks, is it grindingthemocks.substack.com? What's the URL at this point?
You can find all of my stuff at a bunch of different places. So one is still grindingthemocks.com, my app with my public data. All the charts on there should be updated to include the results from last night. But yeah, the Substack, I just posted a bunch of the stuff that we talked about today on my Substack for the round one review. And then NFL IQ still has Grinding the Mocks data in it. And that's also a good place to go for your NFL draft prospect data needs.
And a reminder, of course, Mike's Substack, miketenier.substack.com. And if you don't have an NFL Pro subscription at FTN, again, you get all the DVOA data plus the Jeff Radcliffe Rookie Fantasy Scouting Guide, fully updated next week. Use code SHOTS at checkout for 10% off. We are off for shows now until late June or early July. Then we'll be back to preview the season and the FTN Football Almanac 2026. Until then, thank you for listening. So long, everybody.